Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on 770 CHQR and More Than Money. Faisal, we get lots of interesting questions about economics in general, right? And there's terms that I think people take for granted that we hear all the time, but don't necessarily understand them and maybe don't understand the connections between different things because it's not always in plain English.
Let me give one example where I think Canadians and Americans have a concern, national debt. The more debt we bring on, it's going to bring economic catastrophe.
Right.
Right. And so I think we need to get our head around that one piece. And then there's going to be a whole bunch of other questions that will come out of it. But, you know, we got to bring some experts on our show.
Well, and I think we've got one here. Howard Yaris is an economist, a professor at New York University. Among other things, he's also the author of Understandable Economics. Holy cow. Howard, welcome to the show, first of all.
Thank you very much, Dave. Thank you very much, Faisal.
I'm looking forward to hearing you make economics understandable. But there's a series of questions that we thought about in advance, Faisal.
Correct.
To try, you know, some of the key concepts that we get often asked about. Let's go down that path.
Yeah, let's start with this. The question that we get, and as Canadians, we look at this and say, you know, all this debt that Americans are putting on, there's got to be some sort of catastrophe on the economy. It's got to hurt in some way. So let's start with that. Is the national debt that the Americans are holding, because we think it's a problem here in Canada, is it a big problem in the United States?
Well, it depends. The big issue is how much debt do we have in the United States? And there are a lot of politicians who will tell you it's way too much. I don't know about you, but $10 trillion sounds very much like $10 billion, sounds very much like $20 billion. I can't get my head around those numbers. So what I did in the book is broke it out on a per person, per American basis. And that's a number you can get your head around. It's $68,000. Everyone can understand what $68,000 is. So our national debt in America, I don't know off the top of my head what the Canadian debt per Canadian is, but in America, the debt is $68,000 per person with a $1,000 a year interest payment. And now you can begin to have an intelligent conversation about it. Is that too much? Virtually everyone who starts a business, virtually everyone who buys a home has a bigger debt. If you go to medical school, you're likely to have a bigger debt. So the issue is are you getting value for it or not? But the point of breaking it down on a per American basis is to show that it's not the existential threat that a lot of politicians make it out to be. It's an issue, and it's a lot of money, $68,000. But if you're getting value for it, it makes sense. If you're not getting value, it doesn't make sense. But the bottom line is it's not a bankruptcy-inducing existential crisis that some people who don't want the government to spend on anything make it out to be.
I like the way he put that down to a per-person cost. Yeah, yeah. That really makes sense. It's easier to digest that. Now let's talk about digesting this. According to all the media out there about inflation and rising interest rates and the Federal Reserve, you're hearing about that all the time. And the real question that comes out is, you know, what does the Fed do and how does it really affect our lives? I think we need to explain that to the average person.
Well, the Fed is America's central bank. Canada has its own central bank. And what the Fed does, that's the source of the U.S. dollar. The Canadian central bank is the source of the Canadian dollar. And they increase the money supply through lending, and they cut back on the money supply by cutting back on lending. And when they raise interest rates, they discourage lending. They slow the economy. And that's what they're doing now. And it's a way to reduce inflation. What's inflation? Everyone knows it's an increase in prices. But why does it happen? It's really very simple, and it's often not discussed. There's a certain amount of money and spending in the economy, and there's a certain amount of stuff, goods and services, that the economy produces each year. And there's a ratio between the two. And if the amount of spending grows faster than the amount of stuff, you get inflation. If they both grow at the same rate, prices are stable. And in the odd case where spending grows slower than the amount of stuff, you get deflation. So they're just trying to slow the spending so that the two things come into a better balance.
Yeah, we often talk about that as too much money chasing too few goods, we say. But Correct. Goods involve services
that's
as well.
That's the
right?
best way.
Yeah, yeah. I
yes,
think that's
the best way to look at it. It's too much money chasing too few goods. And by raising interest rates, they discourage borrowing, which discourages spending. And so there's less money chasing the amount of goods and services. It is goods and services out of the economy. It would be fantastic if the Fed could change that ratio by increasing the amount of goods and services rather than decreasing the spending. That would be a home run. But unfortunately, they don't have any factories or other ways to produce goods and services. So they have to rely on the spending side of that ratio.
Dave, I want to give you a story that happened a few years ago when I took my daughters to a wave pool. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've been there in a while, but every time the waves would start, everybody starts screaming. And then the waves slow down, and everybody calms down. The second time around, the waves come back up, and everybody starts screaming again. And my daughter asked me, why is everybody screaming? We just had the waves come not too long ago. Yeah. And it sounds like a recession. Right. Every time the recession's being called, we all start screaming until it calms down. And then another wave happens. So, you know, when it comes to this, Howard, let's talk about the economy and how it turns down every so often and so forth. This concept of recession. Give us the viewpoint of, you know, why does the economy turn down and how does it get back on track?
Faisal, that's a great analogy to a wave. Before we had the Federal Reserve and before we had central banks, the economy would turn down and banks would fail. There's nothing that causes people to panic and cut their spending than to see their bank shut down and to lose their savings. Fortunately, we've evolved since then. They were called banking panics, and they happened at roughly 10-year intervals before we had central banks. What we have now are central banks. When the economy is falling off a cliff, when it looks like banks are failing, they come in, they lower interest rates, they add money to the economy. If the bank is insolvent, they make sure the depositors are made whole so people don't have to panic and radically cut their spending as they would when a bank fails. So we still have a business cycle, but it's not as volatile. It's not as harsh as it was before we had central banking. We now have a system where the government, through the central bank, comes in and tries to smooth the business cycle. When there's inflation, when the economy is too hot, they raise interest rates and they slow down spending. When the economy is in a recession or not doing well, they try to promote economic activity by lowering interest rates, getting people to borrow, and bring the economy back up through those steps.
Yeah,
recession
exactly.
is normal.
So right, a recession is unfortunate. In a recession, we talk about a recession like it's just one of these things. People lose jobs.
Yep.
Entrepreneurs lose money. Retirement savings get reduced. A recession is a very bad thing. Some of us are more insulated from recessions. You know, back 100 years ago, economists were generally people who came from wealthy families, worked for well-endowed universities. They weren't affected at all by recessions. And they said, this is before the famous economist John Maynard Keynes, who worked in the 1930s. They said, we'll just wait it out. It's like the weather. It goes up, goes down. We'll just wait it out. And it was easy for them to say that because they were not on the front lines of losing their jobs and losing their spending power. John Maynard Keynes came around and said the government has to do something, and one of the main things they do in a recession is lower interest rates to get people spending again.
Okay, but at this point, we'd love to get rid of recessions, but they are part of the cycle. We hope that the central banks have been able to smooth those out so they're not quite as deep or as long as they have
been in the past.
Exactly,
that's the goal.
Yeah, that's right. So evolve along those lines. I think that's cool. Let's talk a little bit about this notion of tax and tax cuts. Here's a question for you. Do tax cuts for the wealthy create jobs, or do they just add to inequality?
Well, we certainly hear claims that they create jobs. There are a lot of politicians that do. I think what they do is they create campaign contributions because the wealthy obviously enjoy tax cuts and reward politicians who support them. But let's think about this is the point of understandable economics, to try to use common sense to think through these things. If you give wealthy people tax cuts, what happens to that money? Wealthy people tend to have everything they need or want, so they just save it. But if you give that money to middle-income or low-income people, what happens to the money? They go out and spend it. They go to stores. They go to wherever they go to spend money. And there's greater demand for goods and services. And what happens when there's greater demand for goods and services? Businesses expand. They hire more people. People get jobs, wages get bid up. So it's by giving money to giving tax cuts rather to middle and lower income people that you really have a direct and immediate impact on the economy. giving tax cuts to the wealthy is it's not going to be re-spent into the economy anytime soon. So again, giving tax cuts to the middle and lower income people has a more direct effect on current economic activity.
Howard, we could talk about all this all day long. Unfortunately, we do have to go to commercial.
Yeah, we sure could.
We will bring you back on to talk about understandable economics. We've been joined by Howard Yaris, economist, professor, mm-hmm. author.
Yep.
And if you want to go and pick up his book, Understandable Economics, because understanding our economy is easier than you think and more important than you know, it's available at Amazon, or you can reach out to us so we can send you that link to purchase his book, about 300 pages worth of great information, easy for us to digest. I would strongly recommend having a read of that book. Once again, Howard, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay, listen, understanding economics to some degree is a part of the journey in retirement, right? And we've got to make sure there's a proper structure and discipline and you understand how these different things work so that you can support the lifestyle that you want in perpetuity in retirement. We're going to talk about that.
On Tuesday, December the 6th, 7 p.m., live at the Carriage House Inn. You need to register for this seminar, so go to morethanmoneyradio.com to register.
How do you maximize your charitable giving in a year when markets are down and inflation's up? Stick around after the break. You're on 770 CHQR and More Than Money.